This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Okay, well, April was Poetry Month, but for me, every day is Poetry Day because I love to read poetry. And so I'm so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper one of my very, very favorite poets. And she's been here many times. And I'm so happy that she's joining us again because she wrote a very special book for Mother's Day. And that's coming up. And I hope that we will talk about that, and I hope you will get it. I'm so happy to welcome Kim Dower to Joy on Paper. Hi, Kim.
Good morning, Patsy, my friend. How are you?
Okay, I'm fine. Well, it's always so good to talk to you. And as I said, right from the beginning, I was so thrilled when I first got in contact with you because I discovered, you know, here you are in a publicist, a famous publicist in L.A., and then it turns out you're a poet, which makes you really special to me because I love poetry.
Well, you know, I'm thrilled that you do love poetry, Patsy, and I would love so many more people to love it. You know, people always say, I don't understand poetry, I'm afraid of poetry, on and on. And, you know, poetry, when a good poem, it's easy to understand. It leads you in. It sort of tells you about yourself. You know, we read a poem to learn about ourselves sometimes, but a good poem is also entertaining.
Oh, it's very entertaining. And it really, this idea of a poem a day is so good because when you read poetry just for that moment, sometimes it's a very short poem, but even if it's a very short poem, just for that moment, something happens to your whole heart. It's just something. There's a different beat to it, and as you're reading, as you're reading poetry, and I love to read it out loud. This the sound of it, the feeling of it, it gets into your system. So that's why I'm so happy that you're here, particularly because this book, I wore this dress today for you, Mom, is such a beautiful example of how simple words, simple ideas, mean so very much.
Well, thank you, first of all. That's a lovely compliment. And I like what you say about how, you know, even a poem a day, it puts you in a different place. It changes your heart. It also changes your brain because the simplicity of the words and the condensed of the little story. You know, a poem is like a little story, and it's like a puzzle sometimes. And your brain functions differently reading a poem than reading prose. Isn't that interesting?
It's so true. It really does. And for people who have this experience of reading poetry, and it's a shame they don't teach it properly in school. They don't give it the joy that poetry should have.
Right.
And that's for people who were lucky enough in the past who had a teacher who loved poetry and would just read poetry just for fun in the middle of a class of another subject, a history class. And I had a teacher like that. And just, well, she was wonderful, and she would read poetry from, particularly poetry from the poets, the British poets who were in World War I.
That's interesting.
She loved history, and that was one of her favorite periods. And there were so many great poets who went through World War I, and many didn't survive. And so, just in the middle of a class, she'd suddenly read a poem. And I think that for all of the students, that was just a wonderful moment in our school life.
Well, the amazing thing with children, and I've had the pleasure of teaching poetry workshops to fourth and fifth and sixth graders, is their imaginations are just unparalleled, and they're not afraid. You know, they don't know about editing or censoring yourself, and they go in so many beautiful directions, and you can give them a prompt. Like, you can say, give me five things, three are true and two are lies, and write lines that three are real and two are not. And their imaginations are so amazing and so rich that they create these poems in the moment that adults would take weeks and months to try to get to the place where they have already gotten in 5 minutes. It's just amazing sometimes to watch.
Now, for you, this book is so personal, and it tell us about the genesis of it, of why you wrote this book, and what the title means to you.
Well, this book is, it's my fifth collection. I wore this dress today for you, Mom. And I saw that throughout all, you know, poems in various collections, the poems that meant the most to people that I would hear about, they would send me an email or they would enjoy it reading, were the poems that I wrote about my own mother or being a mother. So I went through the books and I pulled out a lot of those poems. Plus, there are a lot of new poems. And so this is a compilation of poems about being a mother and having a mother. And also, my mother suffered from dementia, and I really took care of her a lot in the end of her life. And I found, you know, although this doesn't sound funny, I did find some humor in what was going on with her. That's the only way I could kind of deal with it. So the book has an arc also. If you read it from beginning to end, it tells a story of my relationship with her and then her failing. And it also tells a story of my own motherhood. So the book is fun in that way, in that you can read it almost like a novel, go through it from beginning to end and see a story of a family.
Well, I think it's beautiful. And as you said, it really does tell a story of your family. And which poems do you want to read for us today?
Well, you know, I just got back from a book tour, Patsy. I was in New York, and I read at this wonderful store called Shakespeare and Company, and I read at a store called Trident in Boston. And you kind of get a feel what people are most like the most, how they react. And there's a little poem in the book called Bottled Water. And I think the poem really resonates with people because it's universal. And it's a good example of the kind of poem that's in the book, because it's really about nothing. It's about buying bottled water. And yet it sort of tells the story of my mother in a way. So this poem is called Bottled Water. I go to the corner liquor store for a bottle of water. Middle of a hectic day, must get out of the office, stop making decisions. Quit obsessing, does my blue skirt clash with my hot pink flat? Should I get my mother a caregiver or just put her in a home? And I pull open the glass refrigerator door, am confronted by brands, Arrowhead, Glitter Geyser, Deer Park, Spring, Summer, Winter Water, and clearly the bosses of bottled water, real water, and smart water. How different will they taste? If I drink smart water, will I raise my IQ but be less authentic? If I choose real water, will I no longer deny the truth? But will I attract confused, needy people who will take advantage of my realness by dumping their problems on me? And will I be too stupid to help them sort through their murky dilemmas? I take no chances. Buy them both. Sparkling smart, purified real, drain both bottles, look around to see Is anyone watching? I'm now brilliantly hydrated, both real and smart. My insides bubble with compassion and intelligence as I walk the street with a new swagger, knowing the world is mine.
Oh, that is so good. And it is exactly what I tell people, that a simple thing in your life, a simple thing can be turned into a poem that says so much.
Well, it's so much fun, Patsy, really, because I start these poems, I don't know where they're going to go. You know, this truly happened. I went for a bottle of water, but when I opened that refrigerator, the first thing I thought of was my mother. You know, this is how we all go through our lives, doing simple things, crossing the street, driving somewhere, preparing a meal, and thoughts come in our heads, and we don't know where they're coming from, but it's really about what's happening in our lives. And, you know, a poem is sorting out complex feelings, you know, trying to make sense of what doesn't make sense. That's what a good poem will do, both writing one and reading one, you know? So the lead poem in the book, I don't know if you want me to read "I Wore This Dress Today for You, Mom."
Oh, yes, please. I love that one.
So this is a very different poem. You know, bottled water has no line breaks, just for your listeners. It's one straight, like, column. This poem is in stanzas, and it's a different kind of a poem. And it's called "I Wore This Dress Today for You, Mom." Breezy, floral, dancing with color, soft, silky flows as I walk. Easter Sunday, and you always liked to get dressed. Go for brunch. Maybe there's a good movie playing somewhere. Wrong religion. We were not churchgoers, but New Yorkers who understood the value of a parade down Fifth Avenue, bonnets in lavender, powder blues, pinks, hues of spring, the hope it would bring. We had no religion, but we did have Noodlekugel, grandparents, dads who could fix stands, reach the china on the top shelf, carve the turkey. That time has passed. You were the last to go, Mom, and I still feel bad I never got dressed up for you like you wanted me to. I had things to do. But today in L.A., hot the way you liked it, those little birds you love to see flitting from tree to tree, just saw one, a twig in its mouth, preparing a bed for its baby, might still be an egg. I wish you were here. I've got a closet filled with dresses I need to show you.
It's so lovely. And, you know, just recently when they had on the news, they had, you know, the Easter programs, and they were showing people in their Easter bonnets. And there was one particular one I saw on the news. They showed a grandmother, and she's holding hands, and behind her are like three little girls, all in bonnets, and they're uh-huh. I immediately thought of you, and I thought, you know, and when you hear that song, "In Your Easter Bonnet," which when I was a kid, I loved that song. I thought that was such a cool song.
I know.
Wasn't that wonderful?
I love that song. It was a great song, and I did grow up in New York, and there was this great parade, and, you know, spring meant something in New York. That's the thing. You know, out here in L.A., you don't really feel spring because it's very spring-like all year long, you know.
Yeah, well, the same in Detroit. I mean, people, and in Michigan, we had spring, and it was lovely. It was daffodils and tulips, which... I miss, that's one thing I miss here in Florida. We can't have daffodils, tulips, or or lilacs. It's just too hot. But, weren't they wonderful?
Beautiful. You know, beautiful. And a lot of my memories, childhood memories, come out in these poems. Even though I've lived on the West Coast for so many years, your first 15 years are so important. The memories that you keep in your heart, they've started to come out in a lot of my poems. So that's, I love that, actually. It's sort of a reminder of what used to be.
It's true. Just for me, the idea of daffodils. I used to love daffodils so much.
And
the year before the pandemic, my son took me up. We visited Yale, and he took me out to this place where they had fields and fields of daffodils. And I hadn't seen that in so many years, because you don't really see daffodils. You see tulips in Europe, but you don't see a lot of daffodils like we have. And it just took my breath away. And the reminder of my mother, because one of your poems, you talk about different mothers. My mother is that one, the first one you talk about, the one who taught me how to, you know, cut a rose, the one who taught me how to cook and plant tomatoes. And of course, we would plant the tulip bulbs in October, you know, before the frost in northern Michigan. And how eager, and she would just wait for spring, that sight of the first robin, and knowing that her tulips were going to be coming up, and the daffodils, it was just a joyous thing. And I love that poem, the different mothers.
Oh, thank you. You know, I that poem, as you say, it's called Different Mothers. And one thing I think all daughters are guilty of is, no matter what your mother is like, you wish you had the other kind of mother. You know, it's like we always had a friend who had a different mother who did different things. You know, and my mother was a city mother, and she didn't know anything about planting, or as you're describing, which sounds... So I wrote a poem about different mothers. You know, some of us have the mothers who plant and teach us about the birds and the stars. My mother taught me how to accessorize, you know. I mean, it was like... But you always look at these other mothers and think, oh, what... I wish my mother was more like that, you know. Of course, then years later, you're very happy with exactly who your mother was.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, it's true. So your love for poetry started when?
My love for poetry, actually, as a child, I will say that my grandmother would recite Russian poetry. She knew Pushkin, and she knew all the great, and she would recite. I didn't know what she was saying because I didn't understand the language, but I loved the music of poetry. And I loved Winnie the Pooh, and Dr. Seuss, and all these. To me, Dr. Seuss is great poetry. You know, you take some of those stanzas and you read them aloud, and they're fun and they're whimsical and they rhyme. So I used to memorize all these books and write little things. But it wasn't until I got to college, and I went to Emerson College in Boston, and they had an incredible writing program, and I had a young teacher named Thomas Lux when I was a freshman, and I took a class called Introduction to Creative Writing, and he basically changed my life and the lives of everybody in that class, just through his pure exuberance and love and joy of poetry. He instilled that upon a group of us, and we've never stopped writing. And I'm talking many, many years later.
Well, of course, his poem about opening the refrigerator. I love that poem. It's just so wonderful.
Oh, it's a great poem. For your listeners, his name is Thomas Lux, L-U-X, and the poem is called Refrigerator, 1957, and he opens it, and I will tell you this, it is the greatest exercise. I use it in my classes. We sit, and I read the poem aloud, and then I say, okay, you're 10 years old, you're 15 years old, open the refrigerator and describe what you see. And the poems that come out of that are magnificent. A great exercise. But, you know, Patsy, I chose a shorter poem by Thomas Lux, because that's a long poem. And I can read this if you would like.
Yeah, read a shorter one. Yeah, that's fine.
So this poem is three short stanzas. And try to see all the image, everything that comes to mind from these three short stanzas. It's called A Little Tooth. Your baby grows a tooth, then two, and four, and five. Then she wants some meat directly from the bone. It's all over. She'll learn some words. She'll fall in love with Cretan Dolt, a sweet talker on his way to jail. And you, your wife, get old, fly blown, and rue nothing. You did, you loved, your feet are sore. It's dusk, your daughter's tall.
Oh. It's so wonderful what a few words, a few lines can do. And
yeah.
I do hope that people will get this book. It is a wonderful book. And it is called I Wore This Dress Today for You, Mom. And it's by Kim Dower. And you have your website is Kim Dower Poetry, right?
Yep, Kim Dower Poetry, yep.
And it is a wonderful book, and you won lots of awards, and it's wonderful that you're out there reading your poetry around the country. I think it's fantastic.
Oh, thank you, Patsy. It's been a lot of fun. I wish all your listeners a happy Mother's Day. Mothers, we do it all, Patsy. We really do.
We do.
You know, we do. And yeah.
And I love the you have in the front of the book a letter to your son, which
yeah.
is so touching. And I think people should read this and think about it, and also think about writing a letter to your children, explaining some things in your life, and perhaps start writing poetry yourself. Little things. It's so interesting how in life you can open a refrigerator or you can open a display cabinet in a 7-Eleven and you start writing about water. All these things that you can do with words when you have that joy of words. And I think you're just wonderful, Kim. I'm so very, very proud to have you on Joy on Paper to celebrate Mother's Day and poetry.
Well, thank you, Patsy. You're such a wonderful hostess and a reader and a lover of words. And I want to see your poem on daffodils. Okay, so that's your assignment. Just that's your prompt, daffodils. And just whatever comes out of your head, don't edit, don't think, don't cross it out. Write it as if no one's ever going to see it. That's the best trick to writing a poem. You write as if no one's ever going to see it. See it, and you get it all out, and then you edit it as if everyone's going to see it. But you understand what I'm saying?
Exactly. Well, maybe I'll have it by the time Mother's Day comes around next year, and I'll read it to you, okay?
Oh, that's a deal. That's a date.
Okay. Thank you very much. Kim Dower, and the name of the book, again, is I Wore This Dress Today for You, Mom. You can get it online, and just go to her also. She's an award-winning poet, and her website is Kim Dower Poetry. Thank you again. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. All right. We're going to play a book buzz from, you know, I love these book buzzes that Devon Miller does for children's books. And this book that he did a book buzz for last year, it's almost 2 years, it's as relevant today as it was then. And we'll play that at commercials, and then I'll be right back with my next guest.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Club children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. A national bestseller and ranking in at number one in not just one, or two, but three categories on Amazon is the book Come In, Come In, written by best-selling children's book author Roger Hutcherson. Roger's book became number one in the following categories: number one in children's multiculturalism and tolerance, number one in children's social skills, and number one in children's fiction on social situations, all on Amazon. After an experience at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut where shootings occurred, Roger had the honor of painting with kids who saw for their own eyes of the devastating incident. That experience affected him and convinced him to serve those who grieve with his writing and art. Readers get to visit a child's dream of a world where everyone is welcome. Come In, Come In takes readers to a world that's not like any other. It's a world illustrated by Nikki Mills, filled with elephant clouds, dancing tricycles, giggling moons, and so much more. It's a world presenting a possibility in which everyone accepts each other for exactly as they are. It's a world inviting the reader to come and explore. It's a world where you'll certainly see me visiting again and again when reading. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, Ann Putnam. And the name of her book is I Will Leave You Never. And I'm so happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper, Ann.
Thank you so much, Patsy. I'm so happy to be here. Today is my publication day, so it's a banner day all around for me. Thanks so much.
Well, yeah, it's always exciting when you have a new book out, and so I'm happy to be talking about this book, and a little later on, I want to talk to you about a book that I came out last year, The Cuban Quarter Moon. So we have a lot to talk about. So, you know, it's always, as I said, exciting. Pub Day is exciting, and the new book, I Will Leave You Never, is an interesting book about a subject that it's in a way sometimes difficult to write about, but you've done a wonderful job of writing about a difficult story, one that I think people will find intriguing. So tell us about the premise for the new book.
The new book is a story about how you learn to live in joy when the sky is falling, how you learn to live in joy rather than fear, how do you go through your life when it just seems like everything that could go wrong actually is. And it's the story of a family with these little children and how they go through their lives with the idea of mortality, that no child should really have to face at that particular age. It's also the story of the marriage, of how my couple, Jay and Zoe Penny, how they negotiate living with this astonishing fear. The other thing that's happening is happening in their environment, and that is an arsonist is kind of let loose that is setting fires all around where they live. And they live, their house is just next to a wood. And the Northwest, which is where the book is set, is going through kind of an unseasonable drought. And so they fear that any spark might ignite the wood. And so there's danger from without and danger from within. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. You know, nowadays, unfortunately, I think children are so much more aware of the dangers of life. I, as a child, I didn't know anything. I'm so blessed. Was completely ignorant. I just, you know, didn't have all of this. And in your story, of course, there's both this physical, the where they live, and this arson idea, which is so frightening. And it's something that's real. And then, of course, when somebody has a disease, another horrendous thing to deal with. So it's a delicate balance what you have to do here to write a book that you know carries the reader along with you to see both what's going to happen and the growth and the how people can handle when things seem overwhelming.
That's right, and I think what I tried to do in the book, which was actually not hard at all, is to bring out the absolute wonderful, crazy laughter that children provide. Something's always happening with children. They're always saying things and doing things that bring laughter and joy and just nuttiness to life. And another thing that's going on at that point of time in the spring is all nature's just sort of going crazy. A bird is at dawn crashing into their bedroom window over and over and over again. And, you know, a theory is that the bird is drunk on elderberries or something. And then slugs are coming in the house mysteriously and eating the computer paper and then mysteriously vanishing. And so there's just a lot of pets and a lot of life, and a lot of fun that leavens the harder things in the book.
And a lot of dogs.
Yes.
I think you like dogs.
I do. I don't have a dog at the moment, but I have all my life. And yes, the dog in this story gets knocked up, as we might say, by a neighbor dog. And the puppies are born in their bedroom. Jay makes a whelping box. And so they have six little Malamute puppies. So there are plenty of dogs around. Yeah. And that provides a wonderful kind of sense of affirmation of life all around.
It certainly does, and of all the dogs, if I had a dog, that's a dog I would have, because they are...
It's a wonderful... I enjoyed writing the dog part so much, because that's an extraordinary breed. There's kind of a wildness to a Malamute. They're kind of higher up on the chain, more toward the wolf, and there's just sort of a regal dignity about them. So that was wonderful fun being able to recreate that.
Well, it's nice that you use the word regal, because I had a girlfriend who had a Malamute, and she had this gigantic house. We lived in Houston, and she had this big house, and he was, his name was Royal. And when he would walk, he would walk through that living room like he was a king. Absolutely a beautiful dog. I didn't know if it was good to have. Well, it was air conditioned, very air conditioned in that house.
You know. That would happen.
But I thought, you know, of all the dogs to have in Texas, that dog. But
that's quite an irony.
But she kept the house freezing. But she could afford it. So she was rich, so she kept it cold for him.
That's a great little story in itself.
Exactly. So, and as I said, you know, it's always difficult to deal with illnesses, with pain, with suffering. Mm-hmm. With your writing, I should mention. So I mean, you write beautifully, of course. Of course, a lot of that comes from the fact that I think you've been studying Hemingway for a lot of your life.
I have.
So you are a major Hemingway scholar.
Well, it seems that I have been living a life with Ernest for since I was about 19. Yeah.
So something's rubbed him. Off. Some of his writing, I think, has rubbed off on you.
It has. How could it not? You know. My life with Hemingway is the kind of embedded in the book that you referenced, Cuban Quarter Moon, which, if we have time, we could talk about that later. But I thought he would turn out to be kind of a teenage crush because I fell in love with him at 19. But I wound up doing a doctoral dissertation on him, and then going on to be a working scholar, and then taking all these trips to Cuba with Hemingway colloquiums that were held in Havana, and that led to so many things, including a whole book. So. Yes, I go way back and way forward with Hemingway. Yeah.
Well, and as you're writing, does it occur to you sometimes? Do you say to yourself, "Well, what would Hemingway think of this paragraph?"
I think occasionally, consciously, and probably subconsciously, quite a bit, because you know every word has to count. And you can't waste any words. And I think that lesson is a lesson that all writers struggle with forever, because you always want to put down every gorgeous word that occurs to you. And, of course, you can't, because often less really is more. And so I think that lesson is in there in the hard drive, yes.
Well, of course, he got that from his working on a newspaper, where he learned how to write succinctly and quickly, so that he really developed this talent of being able to use every word just right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And I also fell in love with him at a young age, because he spent time up in northern Michigan. That's where I'm from, the Upper Peninsula. And so I actually had met people who fished with him, because he came up there for fishing. So, so when I was a kid, there were still people around who had been fishing with Hemingway.
I want your autograph. Oh, that's wonderful.
It is. It's so, because he loved it. He loved it there. Of course, northern Michigan, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, is so beautiful, and just his kind of country.
You bet.
But you found the other place that he loved, and that was Cuba, which has taken you. I don't know. You've made a lot of trips there.
I have. Yeah, I think I've made 6 to 8 different trips as a part of staying as a Hemingway colloquium, where American and Cuban scholars got together to kind of exchange papers and ideas. And Cuba broke my heart. I fell in love with it, and then it absolutely broke my heart. And so
was I to do but write a novel about it? And then I kept, you know, started the novel, then I'd go back and have another trip, and other things would happen, and I'd have to add to the novel. And finally, I just said, I've got to stop going to Cuba, because I'll write a 12,000-page novel that no one could ever even lift, let alone read. But it was just so extraordinary. The things that happened, the way I was able to meld my imagination with actual things and people. And I think that was my challenge in I Will Leave You Never, because that is my most autobiographical work. And my challenge was to take the familiar and, you know, as writers do, and move back and make it strange, make it new. And when you do that, it takes time, and then a magical kind of melding of the imagination and autobiography. And what I'd like to use the example of NaCl. Na is sodium, Cl is chloride, and separately they're nothing, but you put Na and Cl together and you get salt. So that's kind of what happened. The people started out being familiar and autobiographical, but they became their whole absolute new self through the imagination. And truly, when I look back at the book and reread it and I'm talking about it, I don't know which events really happened and which ones came out of my imagination. They are all true, and they are all made up at the same time. It's quite magical, and I'm kind of in awe of what happened when I finally finished the book. Yeah.
Well, because it is about a scholar who goes to Cuba and discovers a lot of things. So I can see, you know, how you really are in this book. Wow. I must say it is a fantastic book. I was so happy. I missed when it came out. Wasn't on your publisher's list, but it's a fantastic book. So again, it's just sometimes things are meant to be. That I was so happy that I got this book, the new one, I Will Leave You Never, and it gave me this opportunity to go back and you know read the Hemingway book, because we're right now in my condo building here. You know, I'm in Clearwater, Florida, and in my condo building there are two men growing their Hemingway beards.
Of course.
Because they're going to go down in July. They're going to go down to the Key West for the contest. And every year they start growing them. They're, you know, getting them all in shape, getting it. And they're going to head down there and hope that they will win the contest.
Yep, that's right. And people want to write like Hemingway, but there's so much more to Hemingway than that masculinity. There's just so much to discover about him. And I think the newer scholarship is coming out. Is exploring some of the depths and richness that the earlier scholars missed. And that makes it very exciting, for sure. Yeah. But I think that the two processes of writing I Will Leave You Never and Cuban Quarter Moon, again, a writer always starts with the familiar, even if it's the familiar of dreams or the familiar of imaginings, and then something happens to that familiar to make it something altogether new. And I couldn't explain it so much as just point to it and say that it is absolutely magical what happens when you take, you know, you think, okay, I'm going to work with this material, I know this material, and then it is transformed almost by magic. It isn't magic, it's hard work, but it feels, when you look back on it, you think, how did I do that? How did I come up with that image or that moment? And I don't know. I just have to say to the universe, thank you.
Well, you've done a wonderful job with the new book, and I think that, you know, people will enjoy it very much. Although some of it is difficult, the whole process of reading a book is learning and getting into the characters. And as I said, with your characters, really strong characters, and the children are great, and you touch on a subject that I think it's a universal thing of dealing with tragedy, and it's important to discover how people do it. And so from that, you know, for that book, I think it's a wonderful thing that today is the release date for I Will Leave You Never. And people can go to your website, which is Ann Putnam Writer, right? Ann Putnam Writer. You don't want people just to go to, don't just search for Ann Putnam, or they'll land up with,
and you'll get rich in New England. Yeah.
That's right. Then you get it. So of all of Hemingway's drinks, which one is your favorite?
Oh dear, I suppose the mojito. That's it's kind of ubiquitous in Cuba. I have a ritual every afternoon at 4 o'clock. I have a Cuba Libre with my husband, who also knows Cuba, and this is rum, and it's not any rum; it's Havana Club rum, which is altogether different from Captain Morgan's rum. And we'll have a drink and toast Ernest about 4 o'clock, if you know, weather permitting. We'll go outside and do that. Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool. That's pretty nice. I like that. That's a nice tradition. I'll join you one day.
Please do that.
That would be great. I would like you to come back. Would you come back and talk a little bit about Hedgebrook?
Oh, I would love to. I would love to change my life. Yes. Oh.
Exactly. And I've been encouraging authors, now that the pandemic's over, a lot of people who started writing, and they keep asking me, how can I get better? What can I do? What blah. And I keep saying, really, really, it's wonderful to do a retreat. And of course, of all the retreats, I think Hedgebrook is the greatest. So,
thank you. Yes, I would love to come back and talk.
Okay. I will send you a date. And I will have you back here, and we will talk about Hedgebrook, because it's inspiring, and your work is inspiring to people, and they will be inspired to know that you were inspired by Hedgebrook. So it all works out.
Oh, lovely. It's been a marvelous time to talk to you on this really special day for me. So thanks so very much.
And you know, maybe I'm going to have to get myself some rum, Cuban rum, and... And toast at my 4 o'clock.
Good luck on the Cuban rum, because you can't get it in the U.S. because it's banned.
Okay. Well, I know people here. You know,
you're in Florida.
I'm in Florida. I know people.
Swim to Havana.
That's it. Okay. It was great talking to you, Ann Putnam. You're fantastic. And it's Ann Putnam
Thank
Writer.
You.
Please go to her with. The proper website. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, yep. Yeah, wonderful. Oh, I like that. I haven't had a Cuba Libre for years. I forgot about those things. My goodness, nice reminder. And she is a scholar about Hemingway. She's made her whole life now since she's 14 about Hemingway. Gets a doctorate in Hemingway, reads everything Hemingway, and... Of course, people are. I hope that people think his writing's still relevant nowadays. Who knows what's going on with people? But definitely, of course, Hemingway has a connection here in Florida, just like F. Scott Fitzgerald has a connection right here in our area. Because he came to the Don Cesar Hotel here to open it up, and I hope that people will think about that sometimes and come to Florida and stay at the Don Cesar Hotel, and that's where Zelda used to go out there on the beach in front of the Don Cesar Hotel and dance in the moonlight. So quite quite an impressive time there. And I love to go to the Don Cesar and just sit out there. Oh, I bet they'd make a nice Cuba Libre. So it's a wonderful, wonderful place to visit. And if you're anybody's coming here to visit in Florida, if you can afford to stay at the hotel, that's the place to stay. If I was going to come and visit, that's where I would want to be, because it's a beautiful hotel. And, of course, with F. Scott Fitzgerald, he actually wrote a story where he features the hotel in the story. So it's wonderful for our area. And of course, one day I'm going to get a sort of dueling scholars on, the F. Scott Fitzgerald scholars and the Hemingway scholars, and then they can fight together who's the best, because there's a lot of tension between the two groups. So many Hemingway people do not like F. Scott Fitzgerald people. It's fun. I was in a party one time where literally the room was 50-50, and all the Hemingway people went to one side and all F. Scott Fitzgerald people went to the other side. And everybody got very, I don't know, maybe they were a little tipsy, but they were not so nice to each other, because they each had their opinion of who was better, and also who was a better person, and who, let's say, wasn't so kind to the other. So it's a great thing to do. Yeah, I'm going to have to do that. But I will also have Ann Putnam back, and we will talk about Hedgebrook. And if you are looking for a white writing retreat, please check out Hedgebrook. It is fantastic. It is a place, if you can do it, if you can go and get away and write and write and write, the place you want to go is Hedgebrook. It is the most gorgeous place, with log cabins, and oh, it's a fantastic place, and people who love writing. And I was so happy that Kim Dower was on. And I want to remind everyone, Jim Lamb wrote a beautiful book about poetry. It's called Dark Fruit. It's available online, and I've played his poems here. And again, he takes one, his collection is absolutely perfect. It's eclectic. It's got a poem for everybody. And you will love that book, Dark Fruit. Meanwhile, remember what I always tell everyone. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't unless you start writing. So get busy and write and write, and go to a writer's retreat. And I think Carol J. Perry's in her own writer's retreat. She locks herself in, does 1,000 words a day, because she's got 2 new books coming out. Wow, this is fantastic. For Witch City Mysteries and for Haunted Haven, which is set here in Florida. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. He saluted me, and I saluted him, because I really, really should have been a general. Oh my gosh, I would have been so good. Oh, it just makes me crazy to think what a great general I would have been. Okay, bye-bye.